This talk is called FRQRs. You know, talks sometimes FAQs, frequently asked questions. Well, this is frequently revisited quotes and reflections, FRQRs. So, kind of best hits in terms of Dharma instruction from my experience. The one that still is always my favorite, spoken by a great 20th century Dzogchen master, Nyosho Ken Rinpoche. Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the restless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara, rest in natural great peace. Something, a sense of humor about that, saying just exactly how it is. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts. The mind just goes and goes and goes. And what we experience is karma, really, the result of the past in the present. So this beautiful image of relentless waves, and then the sense of resting in natural great peace. When we were starting the meditation, the image of big sky mind, the mind open, vast, empty, like an empty blue sky. We have been having the great good fortune recently of seeing a lot of empty blue sky. So it's nice to remember and to use that in our practice. I remember once hearing that the Dalai Lama was asked for some meditation instruction, and he said, one time he said, lie down in the grass and gaze at the blue sky. If it's morning, face west. If it's evening, face east. No burning retinas. And gaze into the blue sky. And at some point, your gaze and your awareness will fall back. And you'll get a sense of the mind vast and empty, like the empty blue sky. That's the natural great peace. And then whatever comes and goes, arises and passes like clouds drifting through the empty blue sky of mind. So there can be a sense of resting. I have some favorites from Ajahn Chah. And one, he says, talking about taking a break or getting some rest, we find rest in the practice itself. Once we've practiced to get to the goal, know the goal, and be the goal, then when we are active, there's no way to incur loss or be harmed. When we are sitting still, there is no way we can be harmed. In all situations, nothing can affect us. Practice has matured to fulfillment, and we have reached the destination. Maybe today we don't have a chance to sit and practice samadhi, practice concentration. But we are okay. Samadhi doesn't mean only sitting. There can be samadhi in all postures. There won't be anything that can interfere. Such words as, "I'm not in a clear state of mind now, so I can't practice," will not be heard. We won't have such ideas. We will never feel that way. Once our practice is well developed and complete, this is how it should be. Free of doubt and perplexity, this sense of rest, finding rest in the practice itself. For me, I've used the word oasis, that the practice of mindfulness, awareness, openness can be the feeling of oasis in whatever's happening, whatever difficulty, whatever seems quite stressful, or just busyness, that sense of busyness going through the day, busy, 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 doing, doing, doing. Behind it all, moving through it all, is the empty blue sky. And so taking a moment to allow oneself to open to that awareness can be the moment of rest. And then we know too that this open blue sky is shot through and through with sunlight. And the sunlight is the energy of compassion. When you're standing out in the open, empty blue sky, always there's sunlight, always sunlight. So when we rest for a moment in the sense of the empty blue sky of mind, then it's shot through and through with compassion, always there like sunlight. This is the natural great peace and the possibility to rest there. It means that we have to develop an ability to rest in the middle of change, to rest even though there is movement. Eventually a skill of because there's movement. Remember that old yoga poster, Swami Satchidananda, standing in whatever posture it was, one-legged on a surfboard. It was a real photo, and it said, "You can't stop the waves, but you can learn how to surf. Study yoga with Swami Satchidananda." In the midst of the movement, in the midst of the pounding waves of samsara, as Nyosha Ken mentions, we can learn to rest in the natural great peace which surrounds it, which is through and through it, which is everywhere. A movement, just a movement of attention, just a movement of awareness. Instead of the feeling of contracting into the story, the objects, the drama, the boredom, the ordinariness, the stuff, that contraction, releasing that, opening into the empty sky of mind. Resting there for a minute. The peace of that. Openness. Anything can happen. Space is like that. It allows anything. Earth is like that. It supports anything. A movement of attention into that wide, open, spacious awareness. even though or because of impermanence, change, always happening within that. Ajahn Chah says, at all times it is impermanence that rules. I don't know if the translator actually meant it to be that. He says, in the final analysis, the way of the Buddha flourishes through impermanence. It is always timely and relevant, whether in the time of the Buddha, in other times past, in the present age, or in the future. At all times, it is impermanence that rules. This is something you should meditate on. The true and correct words of the sages will not lack mention of impermanence. This is the truth. If there is no mention of impermanence, it is not the speech of the wise. It is not the speech of the Buddha or the Aryas. It's called speech that does not accept the truth of existence. Clearly, a message there. Reflecting on impermanence, contemplating impermanence. Someone asked just the other day about wanting to integrate the wisdom at the heart of the teachings while also doing the mindfulness and insight practice. And how would you do that? How would one do that? Because you don't want to be thinking. In the mindfulness practice, the insight practice, we don't want to stray into thinking. So I felt that the primary way to do this is in our awareness, always register that we are seeing impermanence. We don't have to think it, we just have to see it. That the sense that that is what is being seen. In small ways, in big ways, and so forth, as we bring our awareness and our attention to the rising and passing of thoughts, emotions, sensations, allowing ourselves to know that everything is changing. Everything is changing. Occasionally one could challenge oneself to see if one could find something that doesn't change. Just as a little experiment. But really just bringing that attention, adding that additional attention. In this one little article I was reading, Ajahn Chah makes a suggestion, which is a reflection on impermanence, but in a language I hadn't heard. Or maybe it's the translator. Seeing when the mind gets stuck or attached to anything at all, a quick reflection, this is uncertain. And that word was used, uncertain. So I've used this kind of technique of reflection as this is always changing. Or seeing anicca, seeing anicca, seeing clearly anicca, change. Or just every now and then whispering to yourself in the mind, impermanence, impermanence, impermanence. But uncertain. Ooh, I think that's good. It's very exciting to see, in this time of the Dharma coming to the West and then whatever language we happen to speak, finding a word that lights it up a little bit more. Maybe the word uncertain, if it's translated into Italian or French, maybe it wouldn't have that. But for me, this is good. Because my experience is that the mind wants to grasp, even in little ways, trying to make something certain, the story certain. This is how it is. This is what I know. Or even, this is my problem. This is what I'm working with now. So the mind throws up these stories, these thoughts, these beliefs, these notions, and it just does it. And then we can see it, uncertain. The mind can say, well, but I'm worried about such and such. Uncertain. It's kind of comforting. Everything is uncertain. Everything is moving. Everything is changing. So a background of seeing impermanence. Ajahn Chah, this is the truth. If there is no mention of impermanence, it is not the speech of the wise. Big underlining, red pink highlighter, arrows pointing on our path, seeing impermanence, seeing change. We can know it, we can understand it, we can read it in books, months, years, before we actually allow ourselves to keep seeing it, keep seeing it, keep seeing it, keep seeing it. Sometimes on retreats, it can feel like everything is dissolving, everything is dissolving, everything is dissolving. And you might go to your interview teacher and have this sense of melancholy, you know, everything dissolving, dissolving. And you might get a big grin from the teacher. Very good, very good. Insight into impermanence. You know, they're very happy. We feel a bit melancholy because it's all slipping away, slipping away, slipping away. But it never wasn't that way. It never wasn't. This is Ajahn Chah again. All things have need of a way of release. Contemplation is not a matter of holding on and sticking to things. It is a matter of releasing. It's another nice word. I don't know who this translator was or is, but another nice one to, with your practice, to help shift that feeling. Sitting, meditation, feeling tight somehow, some story, something sticky, sticky. A little whisper, release. 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 Whatever. Release. Very nice. Just kind of expanding into that empty blue sky. Tension in the body. Release. Release. Then he says, when practice really seems to be good, don't be intoxicated by that good. It's important not to be intoxicated. If you're intoxicated by it, it becomes something harmful, and your practice is no longer correct. We do our best, but it's important not to become drunk on our efforts. Otherwise, we are out of harmony with the Dhamma. This is the Buddha's advice. That's really nice. Let's just take a moment and enjoy that one. I love cell phones. Please don't feel bad. What a wonderful invitation to be happy for a moment, right? Mudita. They're like little mudita machines. Take a moment. Joy, joy, joy. joy is randomly arising. You know? Enjoy it when you can, right? Just that's a great one. I want you to put that on mine. All right, but no, let's not get intoxicated. He says, even the good is not something to get intoxicated by. Be aware of this when it happens. So this sense of releasing, that's what laughing does, doesn't it? Just release. Just release. Let it go. Birth, aging, illness, and death. It's brief, but it's a universal truth. So see it clearly and acknowledge these facts. If you acknowledge them, you will be able to let go. Gain, rank, praise, happiness, and their opposites. You can let them go because you know them for what they are. If we reach this place of recognizing truth, we will be uncomplicated, undemanding people, content with simple food, dwelling, and other requisites for life, easy to speak to, and unassuming in our actions. Without difficulty or trouble, we will live at ease. One who meditates and realizes a tranquil mind will be like this. Isn't that interesting? He says that when we can see the truth of anicca, impermanence, change, when we see clearly that everything is involved in birth, aging, illness, death, that's the way of it. When we can see that clearly and acknowledge it for what it is, just acknowledge simply, then you'll be able to let go. Just imagine, what could that be? So, experiencing and acknowledging, and then you're able to let go. This is in the mindfulness practice, if you do the mental noting technique, this is really, when it's done really well, that's what it's about. That's the only thing that it's about. It's just a little tool that's used to very clearly acknowledge exactly what is occurring, because the only reason to use it is because then you're able to let go. It's very odd. It's in another way, another word is acceptance. We accept the presence of something and then we are able to let go. If we can't accept the present, and accepting doesn't mean we have to like it. Just accepting the present. There's the presence. There's a lot of unpleasant experiences. So we accept their presence. We maybe even note them as unpleasant. Hearing, unpleasant. Sensation, unpleasant. Stabbing sensation, really unpleasant. But in that moment then of acknowledging the presence, gives us the ability also to let it go. You know, you're at the beach with about a 3-year-old, and, or maybe you're at the beach with yourself, and your 3-year-old comes, and there's this sense of picking up things, or a 3-year-old bringing things to you. And you as the adult, what your job is to say, oh, isn't that nice? And then they smile gleefully and run off. And then they bring something else. And you say, oh, isn't that nice? And they smile and run off. If you say, don't bother me, I'm talking with my friend. I'm reading something very important, something like that. Then they'll keep showing, showing, showing. But if you take the moment, just, oh, that's really nice. It's a rock. It's a shell. I don't know what that is, but it's really nice. Then they're very happy and they run off. This is our mind, our body is doing this somehow. There's a 3-year-old or 12 of them in there bringing things, and we need to train ourselves. We're always trying to either not look at the stuff that's unpleasant, or hang on to the stuff that's pleasant, or ignore the neutral. But if we can, in our practice, we're doing this very profound thing, accepting, acknowledging, and then we're able to let go, really let go. It seems kind of obvious, I mean, once in retrospect. If I don't ever pick up this water bottle, how would I let it go? Seems like there's some basic physics or something here. Just pick it up, let it go. So there's something about our practice that's actually like that. It seems dead simple. And in fact, we're often told it's a simple practice. It's not easy, but it's simple. So we bring mindfulness, acceptance, seeing clearly what something actually is. It's pleasantness, it's unpleasantness, our reaction. Acknowledge, and then we're able to let it go. And then something like he mentions gain, rank, praise, happiness, and their opposites, he says. So, of course, it's gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, pleasure and pain. Those are the 8 vicissitudes. So you can let them go because you recognize them for what they are. They are things that arise and pass. They are impermanent. They are uncertain. They are always changing. When they're present, if they're pleasant, they're pleasant. If they're unpleasant, they're unpleasant. We can accept their presence, and then we can let them go when they go. And then he says, if we reach this place of recognizing this truth, we will be uncomplicated, undemanding people. Nice thing to say. What a lovely notion. Uncomplicated, undemanding people. It's something to imagine for a moment after having such complicated lives and our culture and our society and our educational system and everything seems so complicated, and that it engenders complication. Then have the sense of becoming uncomplicated, undemanding people. Content with simple food, dwelling, and other requisites for life. Easy to speak to. Easy to speak to. And undemanding in our actions. Unassuming in our actions. Without difficulty or trouble, we will live at ease. One who meditates and realizes a tranquil mind will be like this. Then he says, so please don't get lost in doubts about the practice. Don't get attached to your own views. Don't get attached to others' views. Staying in this middle place, wisdom can be born correctly and to full measure. So should we not listen to the Dhamma? We should. But then we should put the knowledge we gain into practice. You read a lot of Ajahn Chah, you'll very big on that. Put it into practice. But this doesn't mean that we're following a person who teaches us. This doesn't mean we're following a person who teaches us. We follow the experience and the awareness that arises as we put the teaching into practice. We follow the experience and the awareness that arises as we put the teaching into practice. And then he says too, you should have awareness in letting go. Things flow by and you let them go, but not in a dull, indifferent manner, without seeing what is happening. There has to be mindfulness. So that's also an important piece, that while the letting go is occurring, the awareness is there. So, and my feeling about that is so that we can actually feel the release. And what we feel is the moments of letting go of suffering. There has to be mindfulness. All the things I've been saying are pointing to having mindfulness protecting you at all times. It means practicing with wisdom, not with delusion. Then we will gain true knowledge as wisdom becomes bold and keeps on increasing. Mindfulness, mindfulness, mindful awareness, seeing impermanence. Letting go, letting go, letting go. The audio portion of the program is letting go, letting go. It's good, huh? It's good. It's right in with the subject. All right. Let's take a little look at emotions. It's good to work in the practical with emotions. Emotions are hard, right? And difficult in our practice, and they show up a lot. So using the reflection on impermanence can help tremendously when we're tangled up in emotion. That sense of uncertain, let go, release, release, because whatever it is, whatever the story is, it will not last. So we know that clearly, it will not last, nothing will last. So this clinging to the emotional drama can be loosened a bit, can be opened a bit, a little bit. I was thinking of this Tacoma. I don't know, it doesn't have many mosquitoes. Of course, this summer, I know, there's very few anyway because it's dry. So now suppose you had a small child who lived in a place where there were no mosquitoes and then goes on a camping trip with the family and gets first mosquito bites. So the child can be scratching and maybe it's a lot of mosquito bites, so getting upset because it really itches. So we might see the child upset and ask, you know, what's the problem? The child says, this hurts so much. It itches. I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to be itching forever. So then as the adult, you can explain, you won't be itching forever. Right now it seems like it, but what you've got are mosquito bites, and they do itch, but the itching goes away. It's not permanent. When we get tangled up in emotion, you can feel it. It's this sense of assuming that the emotion itself is permanent, the story is permanent, the situation is permanent. We get tangled up in a sense of a permanent situation, and that increases the emotional reactivity, it increases the sense of suffering. We solidify in this whole stuck place. And then if we can remember about the mosquitoes, remember that nothing is permanent. Nothing is permanent. You can start getting a little bit of holes in the solidity of the experience. So try that out. Experiment with, in the heat of some emotion, if you can remember, or in memory, reflecting in the past about emotion. It's not permanent. It's not permanent. Nothing is permanent. And see if that helps you bring in this sense of dissolving. Like the clouds, even if they're thick thunder clouds, behind them is the empty blue sky of mind. So allow yourself to experiment, because this is really helpful in the sense we also see suffering and the end of suffering, which is another core heart teaching on this path. Buddha said, I'm just teaching one topic, suffering and the end of suffering. So if we can actually see it happening in these ordinary kinds of situations, they don't sound profound Dharma, but that's where the Dharma is, right there in the heart of suffering, to see, to reflect on impermanence, to dissolve it a little, and to see a lessening of suffering, then we have this intuitive knowing. We get the wisdom of it. And we begin to build the ability to do this more and more frequently for ourselves. And that's what we're after. We're after the skill itself, the ability to see when the mind is coalescing, making something solid, the suffering that's in that, and then the ability to bring in some mindfulness, reflection on impermanence, uncertain, release, open, and then aware that some letting go is occurring, aware that there's less suffering. So when you're meditating, sometimes if your body's very tight, you can go ahead and just release tension, because it takes mindfulness to feel the tightness, it takes mindfulness to release it, and it takes mindfulness to know it's released. So it's a very good mindfulness practice. And it's also what we're doing with things that aren't as solid as the muscles. The emotions, the thoughts, the beliefs, the stories, our favorite story. This is what I think. These are my beliefs about that. It's tight, tight, tight. Let it go. Uncertain. Uncertain. Release. Let go. Feeling the suffering nature and the openness. The release from suffering. Ajahn Chah. Whoops. Another interesting one. This is very relevant. When the obstacles crop up on the spiritual path, a good practitioner does not lose faith and begin to doubt, but has the discernment to recognize difficulties, whatever they may be, for what they are, just obstacles and nothing more. This is Sogyal Rinpoche saying this. It is the nature of things that when you recognize an obstacle as such, it ceases to be an obstacle. Equally, it is by failing to recognize an obstacle for what it is, and therefore taking it seriously, that it is empowered and solidified and becomes a real blockage. I remember when I first read that. Because the word obstacle implies something really solid. Obstacle. And yet he's saying, recognize difficulties, whatever they come up, as just obstacles. Just obstacles. And nothing more. So what he's trying to tell us is this perspective that says, it's sort of plan ahead, you know. This path will have obstacles. If you expect that in advance, then it's actually not a big deal, is what he's trying to say. But it's still an obstacle, but nothing more than that. A little bit like if you're in a go-kart or something and someone tells you in advance, this is an obstacle course. Then you expect obstacles, right? It's not a problem. It's kind of part of the fun. So maybe we can do that. Maybe we can actually integrate this notion, this feeling that this, you know, this is a powerful path. This is a deep path. This is a profound path. So of course there are going to be obstacles. If there weren't, there'd be a lot, you know, hundreds of thousands of enlightened people walking around, you know, and there aren't. So clearly there are obstacles. And of course we know that, but to have that little, just kind of tweaking the attitude a little bit there to say obstacle, but nothing more than that. So that we recognize it and it actually ceases to be this profound thing. It's just, obstacle. You know, driving the obstacle course, obstacle. Move around it. But if we don't see that, then we take them seriously. It's our taking seriously that empowers them and solidifies them, and then there's real blockage. Interesting and wonderful thing to say, Sogyal Rinpoche. Again, another flavor from it. You know, you can see that there's something being reflected on in all of these, said in different ways. This is Thich Nhat Hanh. Letting go does not mean abandoning one thing in order to seek something else. It means giving up every comparison. Seeing that there is nothing to be removed and nothing to be added, and that the boundary between ourselves and others is not real. We need not give up our human condition in order to become a Buddha. We seek Buddhahood in our very human condition, giving up nothing and seeking nothing. That is the meaning of apanihita, aimlessness, sometimes translated as wishlessness. The neat little punchline there at the end. Often in the Zen tradition particularly, we talk about cultivating actually an attitude of aimlessness, which again, you know, in the translation, like, wait a minute. But then he's a poet, so he helps us. He says, this is sometimes translated as wishlessness. Giving up every comparison, walking the path without comparison, aware that nothing is to be removed and nothing to be added. In Hawaii, they said, it's all good. It's all good. You see how the obstacle is kind of dissolving here in the empty space of mind. Japanese Honji Zenju. The field is vacant and wide open. It is something one has had from the very beginning. You must purify and correct it, clean it up, clean it off, get rid of all deluded conditioning and illusory habits. You will naturally arrive at a place that is clean and pure, full and bright. See this in a lot in the Dzogchen tradition too, this urging us to be aware that the Buddha nature is inside us, clean, pure, full, bright. Already shining, the empty blue sky of mind shot through with compassion. And then we work with cleaning off, releasing, letting go, purifying of all the obscurations, all the stuff that's blocking this light from shining open, clear. Milarepa said, the woes of life succeed one another like the sea's incessant waves. One has barely passed before the next one takes its place. Until you are liberated, pain and pleasure come and go at random, like passers-by encountered in the street. So what's helpful about that? What's helpful about that is getting that flavor, that feeling of not taking it so personally. It's just the way it is. I think I've often mentioned to you this wonderful moment in the staff room at the Insight Meditation Society where staff would, well, you're all out there having quiet meditation. There can be intense Dharma bickering and so forth. Any of you have been staff rooms, you know this sort of thing, and the Dharma da da da, and this struggle going. And there was one day, and people were kind of particularly tangled up in something, and kind of wanting somehow for things to work out. And in that room, it's such, designed such that at the very end of it, is where all the mailboxes for everybody is, the staff and also the teachers. And there's the back door is there. So this intense thing is going on. And Sharon Salzberg, walks in the back door to pick up her mail. And she pulls her mail out and she's sorting through her mail. Of course, she can't help but overhear. And I tell you, that is one brilliant person. She is so... It's so surprising. Sometimes in like the three-month retreat, the question answer, you know, someone will ask a question and she's just quietly sitting there and she opens her mouth and it's like, whoa. So she's overhearing this intense round. Basically, it's just this giant complaint couched in kind of Dhamma words, you know, and trying to make things right and make things better and all of that sort of thing. And out she walks out the door, and as she walks out, she just says, "It's samsara. It's not supposed to work." And out she goes with her mail and stuff, and just jaw drop, you know. Oh, right. Right. So that's it. Milarepa is basically saying, the woes of life succeed one another like the sea's incessant waves. One has barely passed before the next one takes its place. Until you're liberated, pain and pleasure come and go at random, like passers-by encountered in the street. So it's actually a gift, an observation. Don't take it so personally. It's samsara. It really isn't supposed to work. That's not what happens here. So we can lighten a little bit, loosen a little bit. And, you know, it's not your fault. It isn't. It's the way things are. And so with that, we can relax a bit, and actually we end up being much more effective. We end up being able to be the way, the effectiveness that we want by our struggling and our grappling and so forth. It's paradoxical but true. Relax a bit, and the light that's there already can shine through a bit more easily. And with that, not taking it so personally, that relaxing, that releasing, that light, which is the light of wisdom and the light of compassion, knows what to do in little situations, in bigger situations. It knows what to do, and it can guide us. Lao Tzu said, "Some say that my teaching is nonsense. Others call it lofty, but impractical. But to those who have looked inside themselves, this nonsense makes perfect sense. And to those who put it into practice, this loftiness has roots that go deep. I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. These three are your greatest treasures. Simple in actions and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world." Just sit for a moment or two here together. Follow the exhale out. Just follow it out. Release. Letting go, opening into the empty blue sky of mind. Rest in natural great peace. this exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts like the restless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in natural great peace. Thank you.